This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Fine Dining Podcast. Caroline, do you like to dine finely?
I do, because it rhymes with my name.
Caroline, dine fine, drinking water, drinking wine.
With Diane Feinstein.
With Diane Feinstein. RIP. Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all the chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5 out of 10 dining experience. The objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good, which if you listen to this podcast, you're very familiar with the concept.
With a 5 out of 10 experience.
And bad maybe becoming good as God saves us. Recently, featured guests include Marissa Pinson and John Glover as they review Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many hot dogs could fit in their mouths. And today, his IHOP episode dropped. So right now, head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast and click Bee's Giveaway to enter for an all-expenses-paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current frontrunner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at a 5.02 out of 10. For you and three of your friends. And you can watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Caroline, who would you take?
Oh my gosh.
Applebee's.
If I got a table for four at Applebee's.
Yeah.
Obviously, love of my life, Nathan, gonna be there.
My fingers are crossing.
Who likes chain restaurants?
I'm getting a nosebleed.
Probably my friend Jeremy. Okay.
I know him.
That leaves one more. Let me ask you a question, Kevin.
Yeah.
If you were gonna order an Applebee's right now, what would you get?
I'd get a fried onion if they had it.
All right, you're in.
So okay.
As long as we can share.
Hell yeah. Listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th Chipotle episode. That's linktree.com/finediningpodcast. We watched McGee and Me, The Not-So-Great Escape, and we're going to talk about it today on Good Christian Fun.
Yamakipiebo.
Army Hammer Cannibal.
Consider the source.
Hey.
Car, consider the source.
I love two beat.
Everything!
Any of that noodle thing left?
Consider the source.
I'm a fan of my mom.
Consider the source.
Stop the red!
Y'all gonna make me praise the Lord. God is great. God is great. Y'all gonna make me praise the Lord. God is great. God is great.
Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
I'm Caroline.
And we're here to have Good Christian Fun. That was a recently released B-side, of course, of the late, great DMX, who, for real, was a Christian. He talked about God a lot in his work and outside of his work as well.
And we love to honor great fallen Christians on our theme song.
Yeah.
With a parody or just a little snippet of sound, like Lucille Bluth as well.
Alec Baldwin, Christian.
And Alec Baldwin.
Jessica Walter,
career.
Christian. Rami Malek, Christian. And DMX.
Everyone in our theme song is a Christian.
In the pantheon.
Kim Cattrall.
Man, did you see they did that on SNL? They did the jazz Kim Cattrall.
No.
On SNL.
It.
Yes. Now they're just mining YouTube for SNL. Good for them. Good Christian Fun is the podcast where we talk about Christian pop culture, Christian movies, music, and entertainment. The stuff that puts Caroline right to sleep. Makes her go yawn, yawn, yawn. But we're not here to make fun of you or to make you go to church. We're just here to have some fun. It's okay. It's good. It's a safe time.
Just relax. Unclench your jaw. Put your shoulders down.
Unclench
Release
your little
your anus.
Buttholes. Yes.
Yes. Just take a stretch.
Start wiggling
just
your thighs.
Just imagine yourself
around.
Floating in a deep water, swimming in the ocean with McGee or something.
Whip your hair back and forth. It's dislocate
let
your shoulder. Pop your
Except
knees
Christ.
Into socket. Lock
Go
your
back
knees
to church.
And then pass out.
Join a Bible study.
Got a Bible study. Today we're talking about McGee and Me. Caroline, this is the third episode we've spent.
McGee and Three.
This is the maybe the conclusion of a trilogy, if you will.
Ouch.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe McGee comes back. Maybe
have a good time with McGee.
Yeah. I mean, he is he's a scamp. We got to get into, again, trying to figure out what the heck he actually is. Again, mm-hmm. Is he a demon? Is he a manifestation of mental illness? Is he of this world? Is he not of this world?
What? Is he the embodiment of Nick's soul?
Mm. See, I like this idea, like a kind of identity John Cusack situation. That's beautiful to me.
Yeah.
Hey, was that a movie reference I just made? Because I think we got a guest that can talk about movies and perhaps writing and directing them. Folks, you may know him from his movie, Happily, which you can get on video on demand right now. Give it the hell up for Ben David Kravinsky! Yeah.
It's funny, I definitely play that song whenever I enter a room, so yeah. I'm really happy.
Whoa.
This is like such a nice coincidence.
Wow.
Sometimes
we have the synchronicity. This is amazing.
Sometimes, though, I change it up and do a little Jeff Moore in the Distance, maybe some Third Day. But
Jeff Moore and the Distance. Of course, the man, the what was their big song? What was their big song that was the huge hit?
It's like a man, I'm having a brain fart. It was the first concert
run
I ever went to.
Oh,
it might be.
We've listened to this before, like years ago.
Unfortunately, this is on a worst Christian song of all time episode, I believe.
It's a real bummer that I know most of the lyrics to that song. And I can't tell you 90% of my teachers growing up or like some really important memories, but there's entire Jeff Moore in the Distance songs that I have memorized somewhere in like the dungeons of my brain.
Oh, sure.
They should do Jeff Moore in the Distance University, where they put all the important things you're supposed to remember to a perfect catchy song with a sports metaphor.
Mm.
So you'll never forget
yeah.
the year that, you know, Rome fell or whatever you needed to know.
Yeah, whatever. That bullshit like when Rome fell.
Who cares?
Yeah, like an Animaniacs situation, but instead of putting them to public domain music, it's to Jeff Moore in the Distance. So
no, you got to pay. Yeah, it's not for free.
I think you need something, you got to go like a little catchier. I think you got to go with like Five Iron Frenzy if you're really going to... do
sure.
that because okay. it needs to get you hyped about something you're not excited about.
Yeah, Caroline, how do you define ska music and specifically Five Iron Frenzy again? Did you say it's like the clown of musical genres?
I said it's the class clown of
the
music.
Class clown. Okay, excuse me.
Is how it feels to
yeah
me.
I get that. I understand.
You like it, you know, but it's a little annoying and it is definitely like silly.
Right.
I mean, look, finding out that Supertones Strike Back was really just doing a riff on Metallica was heartbreaking because
yeah.
it felt like
wait, what?
They really figured something out.
What are you telling me right now?
I'm telling you that like there's a little bit of a homage to Metallica in that song.
Oh my God.
And it's really, I gave them a little bit more credit than they deserved when I was young.
Hey, well, you know what? Every like 8 years or so, they reunite in Orange County. I'm sure they've played some shows in the last year or so that you can go check out. Just drive on down. By the way, no one calls it the OC, right? We do just call it Orange County. No one actually calls it the OC.
Well, do they call it the OC because no one ever shoots in the OC? Like, that's the real thing. It's like, if you actually made a show that took place in Orange County, mm-hmm. it would be a hellmouth, scary thing. But instead, like, there's a certain amount of distance you can drive away from LA before you end up having to pay extra. And Orange County is too far. So it's always filmed in some nicer city that's pretending to be Orange County.
Yeah, that's right.
That is great.
You know, there's a little inside baseball talk, but that is what the TMZ stands for. That is the 30-mile zone that you can film in without having to pay a little extra.
Is that true?
Well, that is true, yes.
Wow, TMZ I don't know anything about filmmaking.
We're learning about music, film, culture, education.
Listen, I'm learning OC Supertones is actually Metallica, and David's learning TMZ is 30 Mile Zone. Caroline,
and I'll very soon be dropping some sort of, you know, knowledge bomb on YouTube, so just wait for that one. It's coming.
I don't know if I'm excited about it, but I'm gonna deal with it.
You'll know what to do.
Caroline's like, did you know the police are bad sometimes? floor all the time. Did you know that
Lizzie McGuire did McGee first?
Or later. Whoa. Yeah.
McGee and Me is copaganda, and we all know that.
Yeah.
And that's really what I'm here to talk about today.
It's an allegory.
Wait, what is the copaganda in McGee? I mean, besides his parents.
Look, the whole show is about how authority is great, and I'm not prepared enough to make this joke work, so give me a minute. I'm going to circle back in a little bit.
I thought there was like a pro-police episode of McGee, we'll which circle would be well within the realm of possibility.
Come on, Nick. We live in a police state, and it's great.
Let's be one of the boys in blue, Nick. It'll be awesome.
Well, yeah, when McGee goes to police academy because he's a big fan of the movies, but when he gets there, he realizes he has to kill people and has like a crisis about it. And then they connect it to some verse in like Romans 3 or
no, it'll
something.
Be Deuteronomy, and it'll be like kill your enemies and all aliens.
Yeah, it'll be like old Hebrew law where it's like killing is good, like, actually.
When they selectively decide that the Old Testament matters.
Yes. Right. Very pro kill.
Well, you know, I mean, the Republican Party loves the Old Testament a lot of times. They really care about Israel right now for a lot of different complicated reasons. Well, before we get to McGee, Ben Dave, we would love to hear about your story, the Ben David and me story, and the me in that sentence is God. So how did you grow up? How did your religion work itself out? Where'd you grow up geographically? All that stuff.
Well, when I was young, I was an aspiring artist, and one day I drew this guy named McGee, and he came to life.
Oh my God. Oh, wait, that was you?
Yeah, it's actually based on me. That's like the weirdest thing about it. No one's put it on my Wikipedia page yet because I don't have one. But when I do have a Wikipedia page, like the really cool trivia section should be that McGee and Me is based on my life.
And so you get a cut of the royalties every time we stream on YouTube, right?
Yeah, actually, that's exactly how it works. YouTube just sends me
YouTube
big...
is famously good for sending royalties to artists.
Yeah, they airmail me some Bitcoin, which I don't know what is. I just know it's bad for the environment. So I grew up super Southern Baptist, where I went to church like 3 days a week. And then I wasn't allowed to watch or listen to any secular music. So most of my pop culture growing up was this really weird mix of R-rated movies I recorded off of TV because they were edited and a lot of Christian music.
Okay.
So it was supplemented by, Adventures in Odyssey that I would listen to all the time. And McGee and Me was like the big thing because it was very, I'm not going to get too far into that, but it's an example of something that is designed to be like a popular thing used to make you feel really guilty about everything. So like I was a believer for a very long time. I took it very seriously until, I don't know, I was like 17 or 18.
Mm-hmm. You guys are like a youth group leader or anything like that?
Yeah, but I went to, because I moved a few times, because I moved when I was 16 to Iowa. So before that, I was like heavily involved in youth group. And weirdly, I watched my favorite movie of all time with like just me and my youth group leader watching Big Trouble in Little China, which still doesn't really make any sense. But like, the guy's like, hey, we could watch a movie sometime. And it wasn't weird or didn't seem weird. But the point was, I picked that movie, which I'd never seen. And I remember he hated it. And I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
You would pick that movie having not seen it. And you were like, let's try this with the youth group first.
Yeah, well, that's me. I'm like, I took risks.
Kind of a daredevil, it sounds like. Yeah.
It's really, Daredevil's based on me too. Okay. I don't know if you saw that.
Daredevil,
like, well, that is
McGee
one of the best
me.
Parts about like being a kid that likes movies or is figuring it out. Like, you don't know yet, like, oh, what's good or like what's the prestige, unless you're Kevin and I guess you looked it up and like made a list, but
shut up,
but, like, you're, it's a little more like discovery and you watch some weirder stuff too, which is kind of fun. I've seen that movie. It's a bizarre one, but it's fun.
It's my favorite movie of all time. And if you, by bizarre you mean amazing, then
I
was very Southern Baptist, and I moved to Iowa, and within I think a few hours on my first day, someone threatened to throw me in an oven, and it just felt like such a specific thing to say.
Yeah.
And then people started calling me like Jew boy and all this stuff, and I didn't know I knew so little about Judaism that I didn't know that there was like a way to look Jewish, or that there was like physical, like none of this stuff. I knew, like, I'd never even heard of anti-Semitism outside of Schindler's List growing up in Arizona. And like, so I get to Iowa and it's just so much. Suddenly everyone is just being really anti-Semitic towards me. And whoa. So I didn't even know. I remember having to go home. I'm like, why are people calling me Jew boy to my parents? Ooh. But it's like, my name's Ben David. I'm a neurotic writer. I have, you know, this hair and stuff. And I guess it was something to do. So it was funny suddenly going and being treated as if I wasn't like the mainstay. Like, we were still going to like the Baptist church there and stuff. And it was just like a weird culture shock. But I stopped going to church. Like, when I went to college, I went to church like maybe the first two Sundays and then just stopped. And then like when my parents would come to visit on my birthday, they'd like come on a Sunday and say, hey, let's go to church and we'll have food after. But I haven't been inside a church now outside of a funeral in or a wedding in like 18 years. A little less, which is a big turning point from like as a kid going every Sunday morning, Sunday night, Monday night for visitation, Wednesday night for youth group for, you know, years. It fell off pretty quick because once you start to get really opinionated when you're like 20-ish and you think you're an adult, which you're not. No one's really an adult till they're like 27. Like, everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. But at the time when you're 20,
so to the babies
like,
listening to this under the age of 27, get your mommy and daddy in the room and ask them if you have permission to listen to the Good Christian Fun Podcast. Yeah,
and ask yourself, is this godly to listen to? Is this edifying?
Is this Christ honoring? Is this going to be garbage in, garbage out? But yes.
Yeah. 25, 26, you're definitely like a young adult. But you think you're the smartest person alive. So it's like, as soon as I was like, you know, I don't know if I believe in this. I thought I was clearly right because I thought everything I thought was right. But, I have like a lot of traumatic memories of being a Christian growing up because so much of it was centralized on fear and guilt, mostly about like the rapture. For a long time, I just had nightmares about everyone being raptured except me. Like, I had that for like as long as I could remember. And I would just, that stuff would like keep me up at night all the time. Mm-hmm. And all these things that are sort of designed to make you behave just made me like freak out. Like, I'm the kind of person who if a cop's behind me, I think I'm gonna get pulled over and arrested, but like, I'm not speeding and everything's up to date and I have insurance, but I'm like, oh, I did something wrong. Like, I've always had that sort of, oh, I'm probably in trouble. So when you combine that kind of feeling with, you know, people like make you close your eyes at the end of every service and say, now imagine you open up your eyes and everyone around you is gone and you've been rejected from the kingdom of heaven. And I'd be like,
scary. Yeah. And they made it always seem like, and it is just as possible that could happen to you, the person who's been at church all the time, learning all the right things, as it is to the random sinner you know on the street or whatever. Yeah. And it, I don't know if this is comforting to hear or not, but that specific anxiety around the rapture is super common. And like so many kids and people from our generation, especially who were like steeped in a lot of rapture porn, like had that same anxiety. I had big anxiety around demons because they were very literal and real to me. And like in my bedroom every night, I thought, and that kind of thing. And it is traumatic and it sticks with you. And you also don't have the vocabulary or understanding at the time to understand like, oh, this is fear manipulation, mm-hmm. or this is not applying to me, or I'm actually a good person, so I'm going to be okay, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. The funnier thing too about the demon thing is I remember seeing E.T., which my parents told me, they said peanuts breath. So I didn't think that I had heard that word when he calls him penis breath. But there's a thing in the movie where like the kids all play Dungeons and Dragons. And I really wanted to play Dungeons and Dragons, but man alive, did Christians think that Dungeons and Dragons was just like a gateway to worshiping the devil.
Oh yeah.
There's even like an Adventure
Zone. episode about? Yeah, we listened to that one. Yeah,
I haven't heard it since it came out.
It's
but
so
yeah,
scary.
It really made me feel like, oh, if I do the wrong thing, I'm gonna get like sucked through a portal into hell or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then as an adult, you realize that stuff's just fun. But now, like, I feel resentful of not getting to play that when I had more focus as a kid, because it seemed like the perfect thing for, you know, a kid with an active imagination.
Yeah,
totally.
No, D&D was probably so much different before these freaking phones in our pockets all the time. I know. And it's the thing we say, so like the thing that felt so sinister that, yes, you were literally going to be swallowed by hell. It's just dork improv. It's just fun dork improv with your friends and your little dungeon master and everyone yes ands each other. That's all.
Yeah, it's like the most harmless thing.
Yes.
Caught up in like the satanic panic era. Like why Dungeons and Dragons? What happened there?
Who knows?
It's funny. I just think everyone wanted something to be upset about. It always feels there is some sort of element that is still hard for me to understand of Christians wanting to feel persecuted or feel like media is designed against them when culturally, if anyone is pandered to, it is, you know, Christians. So it's kind of a fascinating thing. As long as I can remember, it always feels like, oh, the media is after us, or the entertainment is after us, or like these things are ungodly and blasphemous. And it's like, well, they're not real. So that's the starting point. And like, has anyone actually seen the devil? Like, have you ever met anybody who
I know one man who has. And he's got a new Nike shoe based on his encounter with him.
Hey, man.
I thought you were going to say Carman.
Oh, yes, and Carman.
He's also met the
devil. Okay, I know two men who have met the devil.
You know two men. Yeah. It's weird. And like, hence, that's why we have McGee and me, like all this alternative, you know, entertainment. Mm-hmm. Because the movies that we were so scared of are so polluting and everything. I mean, we'll talk about it soon. But It is sad. You'd be like, oh, I just could have enjoyed Dungeons and Dragons as a kid, or like Harry Potter and things like that, and it would have been fine.
The funny thing is, because I wanted to make movies since I was like 10 years old, but before that, I was always like the lead in the play at church, and I hosted a national radio show for FLR Radio, like Family Life Radio, until my voice changed.
Oh, okay.
So for like, I don't know, like 3 years... there'd be this programming block that would include like Adventures in Odyssey and other stuff on Saturdays. And there'd be two kid hosts and we were playing characters. So it was like me and a girl, and it'd be like, now we're going down the slide to Imagination Land. And on our first stop is Adventures in Odyssey or something. And
this is cute.
And so I did all that. And then I stopped. Once my voice changed, I stopped getting the parts in the play, and then they fired me from the show because you're supposed to sound like a kid.
Man.
And then I only acted like once since then. And it's funny because that experience of doing that was like the first sort of kernel of like me wanting to make stuff or be a creative, was doing that stupid show for Family Life Radio. That was like, it was in like every major city. But you don't do it under your name or anything. It's like you're like Mike or something. It's like this suspension of disbelief where you just stay in character and had like an actual script and everything.
I like that.
Well, when you wrote your own movie, did you finally get to cast yourself again as a boy radio host?
Can you imagine?
Because that's why you make your own stuff. You can control that. You know?
People keep encouraging me. They're like, oh, you should do a little part in this. And I was supposed to have a part in Are You Afraid of the Dark? But they couldn't get me a worker's visa or something. And I keep realizing like I should not. And anyone who's encouraging me just has bad judgment. Cause it's like, like I know if I've been in like a couple movies where like friends movies where I'm just sort of like a very prominent extra. And even those like give me anxiety. So I don't need to like ruin the experience of enjoying my movie.
Yeah. I mean, because it can go one or two ways. One is like, oh, look, it's Alfred Hitchcock. That's funny. He's in that shot. And then the second way is, okay, and the security guard is M. Night Shyamalan, and we're going to spend 20 minutes talking to this guy now. It's like, all right.
I got to do the M. Night Lady in the Water thing where he wrote a character who was the most important culture writer whose work was literally going to change the world, and then cast himself.
Yes. No.
The whole premise is that a Narf travels to our world through a swimming pool to tell M. Night to keep making his stuff and not listen to any self-doubt because he is the most brilliant writer alive.
Oh, and sweetie.
If I remember that correctly, Bob Balaban plays a film critic who is torn to pieces by a wolf in that movie as well.
And there's a bunch of people who get high smoking cigarettes. And the funniest thing about that movie is
rocks, actually.
It is one of the most beautiful movies ever. It's shot by Christopher Doyle, who does like Warren Carr-Wise movies. And the last few shots of it are like some of the most stunning things I've ever seen. But it's like this really beautiful fairy tale approach to a movie about a Narf that comes to tell M. Night he's the best writer of all time. Mm-hmm. So there's like a real disconnect between the premise and the execution. Hey, M. Night, if you listen to this, I think you're great, and I'm sorry for besmirching anything.
M. Night, he was a listener. He stopped listening a long time ago because he didn't agree with our takes on Third Day. He was like, I think Magpal's voice is pretty good, actually.
Yeah, he kept getting mad because you guys said they were better than Hootie and the Blowfish.
Yes, we came out hard on that. We actually came out pretty swinging as far as that one goes. So
the real reason to do this podcast is like, I love niche references, but I have a whole vocabulary of them that are useless. Like, you know, I have some really inside jokes about pop culture in everything I make, but I can't do like an audio adrenaline joke. Like, that'll make one person laugh, maybe, on the inside.
But if you change just one person's life, that's all that matters at the end of the day.
You know, you could have a whole movie of these references and no one would know the references. They'd just be like, oh, you made up all this fake pop culture. You're like, right? You're like, no. Even though you think you know everything because you have Google and everyone on TikTok has discovered everything we loved as kids, there is a subset of pop culture that is still niche.
A little bit hidden, yeah. For sure.
This is the last niche that Kevin and I have made. I think we've unniched it a little bit.
We unniched it a little bit, unfortunately, yes.
I do think that seems to be your mission, is to unniche things.
Yeah, to spread the gospel.
It's just a magical power.
Unniche.
Unniche to, you know, just a handful of listeners, really.
Unniche heart. Say you'll niche me again. I'm sorry, go ahead, Ben David.
It's like when Steven Curtis Chapman made rap unniched when he collaborated with DC Talk.
Got to
like,
be true.
He's the reason
Got to be
people
true.
Started to hear rap.
That's right. Yeah. He was kind of, you know, and in that way, Steven Curtis Chapman, in introducing hip hop to a whole different audience, he was the Hamilton or the sort of Lin-Manuel Miranda of his time by giving hip hop and making it accessible to people who would not have given it a passing thought before. And so we do celebrate him for that way. So there's so much, by the way, in Happily that did indirectly, I don't know if it's intended at all, but it felt indirectly influenced by maybe some experiences in evangelical culture. Even the idea of a couple that seems aspirational, that's annoying to everybody, or the idea of conversations that are not had explicitly that remain subtextual until they become textual before it's too late. Does it feel like there was any sort of influence that faith or your faith upbringing had on that movie, even in an indirect way?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that everything that I make is a sum total of my experiences and my influences. So there's definitely some residual stuff there. It's like, in a way, it does reflect anxiety that I had in friend groups at church when I was a teenager. I remember just, there's a special level of rejection being like not the cool kid in a youth group as opposed to just like regular else, because it's there. It's like, well, we all have this like common connection, but then after church, when some kids go to get pizza and then people don't invite you, that somehow hurts more than like not being invited to something at school. Because at church, it's sort of like, well, we're all in this together. We're like these weirdos who believe in this stuff. So
yeah, and you're supposed to be nice.
Yeah, I remember like, I have a lot of sort of traumatic, low-key traumatic things of being like the weird guy at church where like I wasn't like I'd be in, you know, Sunday school and everyone would be talking about like the NFL. And I just want to talk about like the cart, like the X-Men. And back then no one knew what any of those things were. Mm-hmm. So I was like the nerd in the youth group, which is like, which is just, it's not fun, you know, but there's a lot of the movie that is kind of a manifestation of that paranoia you have, where you're like, am I part of this group because they want me there? Or am I part of this group from happenstance, where like, because of shared history or because of this or that? And that stuff never goes away. But, you know, a lot of the movie is basically like just trying to exercise those demons, but through the prism of being an adult, because adult friend groups are way more complicated. You know, when you're a kid, you don't like become friends with someone because like your kids go to the same school, or because we're inheriting someone that's like your partner's friend, but not your friend. Mm-hmm. So all those dynamics are still born out of me thinking that nobody liked me in the youth group.
Wow. Man, I remember some of those vibes back in the day. And sometimes there'd be a few lone, usually it was a kind young woman who would like come and sit next to me and try to like start up a conversation. Like one of the older like seniors or juniors in high school, and I was either like a freshman or in eighth grade at the time, and they would try to get me a little more included. And it usually worked, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I
just turned tail and left youth group. I was like, I had no friends. I can't do this. Goodbye. Oh, plus, I go to Christian school, which is like one long, nonstop youth group all the time. Yeah, so that's good.
This is a really clumsy thing to say, but the weird thing I realized in hindsight is the few friends that I did make, were the majority of them were like clearly closeted kids who didn't know they were closeted. I just like thought that, you know, they were quirky, like in the way that I am, but like in the way that like, in hindsight, you're like, oh, well, several of my friends in youth group who also felt like they are the outcast. I think there was this weird vibe that like people were off put by their not. It's sort of like anyone who didn't have a very traditional type of behavior or interests had this sort of fringe area of youth group where people were like, I don't know about those guys. Like there's something weird about them, you know? Mm-hmm. And then in hindsight, you realize that some of it was, for me, I'm realizing there was a lot of homophobia, I think, in this youth group that I was in. So it was like, I'd bond with the people who other people like weren't becoming friends with. And I didn't know why they weren't, you know? But then I look back at it and I'm like, oh, I think there was an element of that as well. Does that make any sense?
That totally makes sense. Yeah. I think so.
And even the in-group people were probably also performing those interests, you know, on some level as well. Mm-hmm. Like no one ever feels very cool. So, yeah.
It's really, it's fascinating how much of like that it's performative, or it's something like code switching or something where like people just find out the interests you're supposed to have. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, as long as they do those and sort of blend in, then you can be cool. But again, no one's situation is the same. I'm kind of all over the place here.
No, we're with you.
Yeah, I think that makes sense though. And also too, I think we can all take hopefully a little bit of comfort in the fact that it doesn't seem like any of the three of us peaked in high school, and we don't want to be the kind of people
that... Hey, if the three coolest people on this Zoom call also had a hard time on youth group, you know, it's like, y'all, you're going to be okay, you know?
Oh, man.
But it is funny. It's a thing you can't know unless you were in church, is that youth group can be just like high school, and youth group is supposed to be your, like, escape from the kind of pressure of high school. It's supposed to make you feel like, oh yeah, well, this is a place where you're welcome and you can make friends and we can like praise the Lord.
Yeah.
But it was just as stressful for me. Like, it's all the same thing. It's like, oh, did I get invited to that guy's party? Or like, what's going on with this? Or it's like, wait, who else is going to the DC Talk concert? Oh, I'm going with my parents, I guess. And like,
yeah. <you know? laughs> Yeah. It's hard. Yeah. It's so hard. And it's confusing because it's like, And some kids, I don't know about you, also then in response to that, Jesus becomes like your best friend because you know, that Jesus has talked to you as your companion, your as the person that McGee, will be there for you.
If you will.
Your McGee, if you will. Yeah. And like that spiritual thing that will always accept you. And especially if you're feeling alienated, like in the social groups that are supposed to accept you because you all love Jesus or whatever.
Yeah.
Like a lot of us can go into like more time with God then. That's good.
I do connect with what you're saying, though, Bendava, about the idea of, wait, this was supposed to be a sort of refuge from what I understood to be the nonsense of high school. This is where everyone is supposed to be a little chill. We already have the one thing in common, so we can all literally talk to each other about a particular thing. And then to find that there were sub-cliques and then subcultures within that subculture, it was, I remember, a sort of disillusioning and disappointing experience. The thing in our youth group was like, oh man, it feels like youth pastor's playing favorites, and he likes these particular guys and these particular girls. He doesn't seem to hang out with or want to spend time with anyone else, or like people felt neglected in that. So then that became a weird thing of, oh no, I didn't get to spend time with youth pastor, which like looking back is just so wild sounding.
Yeah, the concept of that is like, it is such an easy position to abuse. And that's like one of the things where, you know, you don't realize until you're an adult, or maybe you realize when you're younger, how much someone can just seem like a nice person, but they just know that they need to present themselves as a nice person so that you don't worry about them. And there's people in hindsight I look back on who I thought were like, oh, they were so nice. And I think about it, I'm like, oh, there was something weird going on there. Oh, and I'm not privy to it. But it is a position that you could easily abuse if you're not a good person. Because like, there's definitely a value, even as a secular person now, to having stuff like that. But there's also a way for it to go bad. I'm sort of cynical about it.
Yeah,
and
all the adults that were like pals with teens, and you're like, oh man, if only I was one of those teens. And in retrospect, you're like, not only are you unemployable in every other industry, and that's why you're being put in charge of me,
you wonder what like the actual good version of that is, where it's like, this person should be here, they're not strange, they seem to be balanced, etc.
I actually, Nate did a youth retreat one time with his friend from college, I think, or high school, and she was a youth group leader. And watching her, I was like, oh, this is how it's done. Like,
oh, that's interesting.
She was sincere, but she was like ridiculous, and she made sure everyone got like their time, and no one was like showboating too much. And she also just seemed cool and normal and not like using fear tactics or anything.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is the best youth pastor I've ever seen.
I think the main appeal to the good version of it is just being like a great party host. Like,
yes,
with like no malice or intention, just like you're trying to make sure everyone's comfortable, having a good time. Like,
you see people
aren't talking, you're like, hey, have you guys met? Just doing that every week, and then every once in a while, say some Bible verses in there.
Unfortunately, I am a great party host, so I think we know where this conversation is leading.
Well, the other thing I found out later on was that most pastors are put in charge of the youth group as like a training ground to become a pastor.
Yeah.
So for a lot of youth group leaders, I mean, there's many who are committed and love kids or whatever, but a lot of them too were also just felt like they were in a holding pen so they could get to the real stage, you know, and like they probably treated their group like that in some way as well.
Well, that version of it makes sense to me, because it's like, but if your end goal is just to stay one, I don't know how that really works, but
I don't know. It's also like great sports coaches, the same people. I'm like, ooh, real hit or miss, you know.
Great sports coaches.
Who you are as a person.
Oh, I know. I saw a tweet that was like,
this or you're passionate about it.
I saw a tweet the other day that was like, I can't explain this, but ACAB includes PE teachers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, when we're talking about I didn't have youth group leaders, but I had like volleyball coaches.
Yeah.
And looking back, every single one of them was like mentally not well in, like, very obviously now.
Caroline, like, we got to do that Christian volleyball movie where it's Helen Hunt plays the volleyball coach.
Yeah.
She's a Christian.
Isn't Caroline, like, one of the main characters,
she is,
too?
She is.
Yes.
But it should be Spike the Devil, and they're playing against possessed kids.
What? Yeah, I mean, that would be awesome.
That is like Space Jam.
That would be directed by Robert Rodriguez. Space Jam.
The opposing team. Oh, has
I guess the
power.
Monstars.
It's not
fair.
Yeah,
they are demons.
They're way too powerful.
Yeah. And just to put a cap on that, big ups to Phoebe Bridgers, who tweeted the other day, just recovered a memory of the time I escaped youth group to go to California Pizza Kitchen. Who amongst us could not relate?
Wait, the volleyball movie is a Christian school going against Hogwarts. Because as we all know, people who practice magic are demons.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah, it's the same. They're sorcerers and they're demons and devils. The problem is, Ben David, J.K. Rowling is now a hero of the Christian right. So you might find some strange bedfellows there, unfortunately.
I would love to figure out a way to separate her existence from that work, because it is a bummer.
Yeah. A boon.
I don't know what's going on in the UK. No offense, but they seem to have a lot of strong opinions about things that don't really deal with their day-to-day life. It's just because
they're surrounded by too much water.
It's the water. Caroline's the water. Convinced it's the them. Water.
That's why else all coastal elites are nuts too.
Whoa.
Okay.
It's all about the coast, literally.
It's all about the water.
It's some sort of coast. Ben David, you would describe yourself as agnostic now? You were saying?
You know, I don't. It's weird. I don't really believe in anything, but I'm also like, I don't know, maybe there's something going on. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a big fan of science without understanding any of it, which is like a real problem. but I understand enough to like be mad about things. but when it comes to this, it's like, I don't know. There's too many things that happened that kind of broke for me, and the real brain teaser that I don't want to get into, but I'm going to get into anyway, that really was the hard part, was the separation between the concept of free will and then that everything is planned or that God has a reason. That is what really broke me from being like a believer to not, was I couldn't reconcile the idea that if things have a plan, then why are we punished for our actions?
Yeah.
It's like, why did God create Adam and Eve if he knew that they were going to sin? And you can say, I've heard a lot of arguments that are both intellectual and also just faith-based about that. But for me, it's too much to deal with, because if God is the reason why I got to make a movie, God's also the reason that, you know, someone I love dies. You know, mm-hmm. if he's not like he's just responsible for the good things, it's just a really tough thing for me to reconcile, is that, and you know, and it's, I think that people can believe in whatever they believe in, as long as they're not hurting people or creating some sort of manipulation, you know, that can be, you know, cause it's the same as like cult tactics or whatever. But for me, that was like the real thing that was really hard and kind of broke the whole thing for me.
That's so fair. And it's interesting too, because the sort of dilemma you're positing is as intellectual as it is emotional. Like, it's not like, could God lift a rock? And then you can just conjecture about it. But it's also, it has to do with the things that we care about, that we love the most, that we fear the most and dread the most. And I remember getting tripped up about that in an insane way when I was like 12 or 13. I think I talked about that a little bit before with you, Caroline, where it's like, I was going to this Christian private school. They had to call in another pastor just to do a Q&A with us, because I wouldn't stop asking the teachers about like, well, free will, God's will, blah, 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 you know, and not being able to reconcile those things.
It's like, are you going to teach me this complicated concept and then not let me have complicated questions about
let
it,
me
you know?
Let me be able to...
We really do need to go to the nth degree of this, because it's extremely important.
I know.
How far does this go?
Yeah, and I
think it plays early into what Ben David was saying about a certain type of like authoritarian understanding of Christianity and God, which is that just be very, very scared that you're behaving wrong, but also know that I'll forgive you no matter what. You know, it's kind of this like hot and cold, like, does it matter what I do? No, but yes, it does.
Yeah.
But only when God lets you know, you know, that kind of thing, where it's like, you're not, you know, it's very scary and the stakes are really high, but you don't really understand it. And like, that's authoritarian, abusive relationships, you know?
Yeah. And I'm more than double the age I was when I first started being curious about that stuff. And I still haven't found anything kind of even close to satisfying as far as that stuff goes. As far as like
the good stuff about being religious growing up mm-hmm. was really helpful. You know, it, just by virtue of feeling less alone, feeling like you can put a bow on the universe and kind of understand things in a way to make things less scary. But when it's counterbalanced by that fear-based guilt thing about behavior, it takes away any of the good, because it just, it feels very, and this is probably not a term people are supposed to say anymore, but if there's another word for schizo, I would use it, which is just the concept that so much of it is contradictory.
Yeah, it's like paradoxical, basically.
But that, and also, there was a lot of hypocrisy where, like, there were people who I really believed in, and I really thought they were, like, walking the path, which made me feel good about doing it, who on multiple occasions you'd find out, like, had tons of skeletons in their closet. And it, which is also a byproduct of treating everyone like perfection is an option. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember being in a van with youth group coming back from some trip, and we started singing a song from Aladdin, and the pastor told us to stop because he's like, "That's that music appeals to your carnal nature. You should only sing songs about Jesus."
Aladdin?
and then people found a lot of porn in that pastor's house. So it's like, you know, I think that's sort of like why I found the movie Saved so beautiful, even though I'm not religious anymore, is I found that movie to be very open to human frailty, that in a way that I didn't feel like religion was when I was younger. It felt mm-hmm. so much just like, you better not be doing something wrong. You better not be. And whoever was saying that was doing something wrong themselves. So it just, that circular loop was really hard for me to deal with.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before too, because like it's hard thinking about like how adults were tasked with teaching us like morality, you know, and so our first understanding of faith was like the kind of faith you teach a little kid, which is that there is black and white. There's very wrong things. There's scary things, things you don't understand. You shouldn't try to get into, you know, you don't know right or wrong yet. You don't know what'll hurt you or not yet. So we're going to make it too explicitly clear, a little bit too scary to scare you away from even trying to figure it mm-hmm. out, and then not give you the tools to like work your way out of it if you do make a mistake, you know, or if you do like see something maybe you thought you weren't supposed to and then you found out it was okay, yeah. you know, that kind of thing. And so that then you get into your teens and it turns into more just like, I don't know, maybe fervor and being a disciple and then like evangelizing, and then you get to an adulthood and you're like, oh, this morality, my first version of Christianity isn't very helpful in the real world.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, there's so much of this stuff is about avoiding talking to your kids about the real world. There is a real sheltering aspect to this blanket approach to morality. So then suddenly you're an adult and you're like, wait, what is this? What is this? What's this thing? What's going on?
Yeah. Or like, oh, this isn't that bad, you know? And
yeah, that's the weirdest one, is like you get so hyped up for things and then they're actually disappointments. So you're like, your attempt to rebel is kind of fucked up, because you're like, guess what, guys, I'm gonna watch an R-rated movie. And you get to the yeah. end of it, you're like, it's like the same as a PG-13 movie, except they said fuck. You know, it's like, oh, okay.
I thought it was on the road to perdition.
Yeah. While watching The Road to Perdition.
Okay. All right. Well, Ben David, thanks for sharing so much of your story and yeah. your upbringing. It was very cool and interesting to hear your perspective. Yeah.
I should have planned really something more, because I feel like I definitely was all over the place.
No, it was great. There was a lot there that I think everyone resonates with, too.
A lot of meat on that bone. Is that a gross metaphor? Excuse me.
A lot of meat on that bone, on that peanut.
On that little peanut. All there right. There you go. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more good Christian fun. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, Caroline, I got a question for you.
Yes.
How is your social battery right now? Are you feeling drained? Do you got a lot of energy right now? Where are you at with things as we speak today?
Well, you know, when you're pregnant, famously, your social battery is endless, actually, because you're powered by a baby battery.
It's like someone slaps a mag charger onto your phone.
Exactly.
And you can go for like 24 hours more.
I am the U.S. Marines of taking down social situations. I feel incredible all the time. So yeah, that's where I'm at. What about you?
Wow. Well, I'm feeling a little drained. And sometimes it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, which is maybe the zone I'm in right now. Mm. And for me, spreading myself too thin is like going to a lot of like Garfield events recently that have been happening over town.
Oh,
with
yeah.
The new movie coming out.
You get so excited about those. You got to spread those out a little more.
I know. And I need to really protect my energy and stuff. But, you know, it's worth asking ourselves, what's the right amount of socializing and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need a little me time, a little alone, introverted time. But either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So things like tuning into yourself, feeling and understanding what you want and need yourself, and then being able to communicate that to those around you, and then most especially to yourself.
Well, if you can't get pregnant immediately, that sounds like a pretty good solution as a backup.
And again, I think I might have even said this before. If I could get pregnant, I would, just to understand what it's like to have even like boundless energy that
right.
can kind of propel me into
to feel
like
feel as incredible as to, you could feel.
To exercise more, mm-hmm. to be working out like 3 hours a day.
Exactly.
Working 9 hours a day on top of that, and then
good
going
brain.
Going out 2 hours. Yes, such a good brain on top of that. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, maybe give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. If you don't like the first person you get, don't worry, there's another one on the docket. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GoodChristianFun today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
10%?
.com/GoodChristianFun. You got some thoughts on that 10%?
That's a good deal.
It is.
The
I agree.
The first month?
And especially because 10% is where I'm feeling my battery is right now. That's BetterHelp.com/GoodChristianFun.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. It's time to dive into this demonic little topic. Come on, let's go. McGee and me. Ben David. What role, what function did McGee and me have in your upbringing, in your childhood?
It had a placebo effect.
Because
it's the approximation of entertainment, you know, and it felt like I was getting the things that I wanted. And you sort of, it's normalized in a very weird way, because like you grow up and like, I really wanted to see Who Framed Roger Rabbit. They're like, oh, you do? Well, how about this thing where it's like live action mixed with a cartoon? And you're like, oh, that's just as cool, because, you know, how would you know? It's like, it'd be like if, you know, every time you wanted to have Coke, your parents gave you like some generic brand version and you would have no frame of reference. But then once you watch something like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, you're like, there's a quality difference here. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. I watch these things so much. The two episodes the most are when you already did Skate Expectations, and then the Not So Great Escape were my favorites. And when I was watching it again last night, I was like, I don't even need to watch this. I know every word of this episode. Wow. to like a really horrifying level. The only real thing that played differently for me was the dad seems like there's deleted scenes of him like hitting the kids. Like he seems very kind of scary.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a fearsome quality.
I was like, I hate this dad. I was like, oh my God. Well, you know what? He is like the like perfect patriarch that focus on the family, like wants dads to be, you know, he's white.
Dad should be distant and unavailable.
Yeah. No fun, no interest in your life except to punish you.
I felt like I was getting punished when Nick was. There's something so effective about that guy's performance where he's like, when he's like, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed kind of thing. But also, well, like I don't want to jump all over. So someone, let's try to have some more kind of a focused approach here. Cause I'm like, well, the last scene and then in the middle and then this shot, I don't want
to
be like,
welcome to GCF.
This is the show.
The lack of focus
is
the brand.
How we do things. There's a sort of poetry, this amorphous bullshit that we do. It's the Not So Great Escape, I believe. Came out on video in 1989. So this show is as old as I am at this point. And it's about young Nick. He wants to see a movie called Night of the Blood Freaks, Part 4, with his little friend. His parents say, no, 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 you can't see that. Then he sneaks out, sees it anyway, is traumatized by the experience, comes home, says, you know what, mommy and daddy, you're right. I shouldn't have seen it. I love you forever. You have my fealty until the end. Oh, captain, my captain, stands on his desk. And then roll credits. Mom and dad were right all along. They were just trying to protect him. So that's kind of the framework of it. Night of the Blood Freaks, Part 4, which I believe is based on, and there was just a Vanity Fair piece that just dropped about this. It's about the Hammer sort of family dynasty and just kind of their whole history, their ancestry, how Army got into the stuff that he was into.
I was going to ask you guys, like, did you genuinely feel curious about like seeing the Night of the Blood Freaks?
Well, that's the reason why I picked it. Yeah. Is I'm a big horror guy and I made like a horror show for kids. And this was probably my origin story for being interested in horror, was watching this, because
no.
Two things were happening at once. I felt like they're right. I'm not old enough to watch these things, but that's a really good tagline. Like when they're like, first there was Dawn of the Blood Freaks, then Day of the Blood Freaks. But now as the shadows begin to fall, it's Night
so
of the
funny.
Blood Freaks. Like that to me, I was like, that sounds cool. And then, but also they also sell the aspect of that, the kids' version of water cooler, which is people talking to each other about what they saw. And it was like one of the first things where I saw that kind of articulated the concept of, oh yeah, Monday at school, everyone's going to want to talk about the new movie. And if you didn't see it, you're a loser. So like I internalized a lot of things they did not intend for me to, because they made it seem so exciting. So yes. At the end, when they don't show it, I'm like, well, maybe it wasn't that bad. Like, you know, you're like, you're kind of curious. But the thing as adult that's so messed up about it is like the moral of the story at the end, which that song I also have memorized, is these images are never going to leave Nick's brain, and he's going to deal with the repercussions of this for the rest of his life.
That's right. They're just terrifying.
Like, it's so weird. They're like, they don't punish him because they're like, you already punished yourself.
Wait, can I play that scene?
So weird.
I want to play that
please.
Clip real
Let's
quick.
Go.
Yeah.
Okay, this is when Nick comes home after he saw the images. He leaves the theater early, and then he comes home.
When your mother and I told you couldn't go, it was for a purpose. We were trying to protect you.
Your mind is the most important thing you have. That's why the Lord is very clear when he says we have to be careful what we put in it. Now, whether you enjoyed the movie or not is beside the point. Just by going to see it, you've put something into your mind to dirty it, to pollute it. It's bound to affect your life. It's garbage in, garbage out, Nicholas.
You've got scenes in your mind that you can never erase. You've got pictures that may be with you for the rest of your life.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry too, son. I want you to go to your room and give this some thought. I'll be up in a little while to talk about your punishment.
All right.
You're so right. They never show what his punishment is, but it's clearly going
to
be a spanking.
Well, they do show that it's like he has to do a bunch of chores the next day, and
then I got excited.
Giving him hey, come on.
I don't know about you guys too, but when I watched that, well, when I learned the very same thing, you know, which is like whatever images you see will be indelible in your brain for the rest of your life, and they'll always mm-hmm. haunt you and scare you.
If you see a guy shooting a guy, you will shoot a guy.
Yeah. And as a kid that was like, you know, just like scared of stuff in general and also scared of horror movies, the thing that this really sent home for me was that seeing sex scenes in movies were just as bad. And I feel like they are setting up little Nick for sex scenes and pornography, because I feel like that was the bigger issue that they were pointing to. Because ultimately, most Christians don't care about violence like at all. They care about sex and like anti-Christian propaganda in their mind. Mm-hmm. And so I remember thinking like, oh, if I saw a sex scene, like that's going to be in my mind forever and I'm going to be turned on forever and I will be sinning and failing God, like basically involuntarily for the rest of my life. Yeah. So I was so scared of seeing those things like for that reason. I mean, it didn't stop me, but it still freaked me out a lot.
It's...
Do we agree?
These are very... there must be universality to these feelings, because it all definitely lines up. Look, I want to make a sequel series of this, which is just Nick in therapy and like unable to have good relationships and like carrying guilt with him everywhere. Oh. And the therapist being like, what the fuck? You had to like escape your house to watch a horror movie and your dad yeah. said your brain was dirty forever?
Polluted. Like... Yes. Yeah.
But the therapist yeah. is McGinn. He's like, come on. He's not so bad, man. No, but you're right, Caroline, in that it is like, it's way more the fix that we could watch everything growing up if it was a
the
man.
Boys are literally playing pretend shooting.
Yes, they have little guns. It's
like
great.
They don't care.
And yeah. like, and of course there is such a like, do y'all remember when we were kids they would show Saving Private Ryan on ABC and the whole conceit of it is, don't worry, we're not editing it for TV, so you can see everyone's guts and limbs hanging out on freaking Normandy Beach. And our parents or grandparents were like, yeah, you should see that. It's
every
good.
Child should
it's
see
good
this.
To see that.
Yes.
But if yeah. it's like a nip or a little dong, a little dangle the dong, that's gonna that'll set you back
that's
quite
it.
Quite a bit.
Well, I feel like they couldn't cover that topic in McGee, so they made it like a scary thing too, you know, rather than like talking about sex scenes in movies.
Was there a True Love Waits episode? Am I imagining that?
Of McGee and Me? I don't think so.
Well, because no, like there's McGee and Me the college years where suddenly he's 40 and like hey. Everyone is like aged up. I don't know maybe it's the New Adventures of McGee and Me. I can't remember.
There was like another special they did in 1995 after this like initial round of VHS stuff.
Because they had this run and there was like five episodes of him as a teenager mm-hmm. and then there was something else. But yeah, I sort of in my head have just decided every single thing I absorbed in like middle school or high school had some sort of True Love Waits episode or song or something. Like it all kind of conflates into the same
all
thing.
Back into that.
Yeah. You're probably not wrong. I mean, there's a scene in the beginning of this where I think the structure is like Nick always reads something from the Bible and then you see McGee acting it out. There's one where he goes to a casino, although it does look like he's going into a video store and then going to where they keep the pornography in the video store, which used to be behind a red curtain. It
oh
looks
God,
like that's what
I
McGee is
that.
Doing. And then he gets like, you yeah. know, thrown off the Casino of Babel or whatever it's called. But
that's the opening of this episode.
Yeah, that's yeah. right.
I love how they also show like all the trash of the world around him when he gets shot out of the Tower of Babel, which
and
is
it's
like VHS
arcade.
Tapes and like
yeah, it's VHS.
Old,
what you're watching?
It's like a boombox.
Yes, yeah. Watching this right now. I mean, I think also to interrogate some of the morality of this, we do need to just talk about the character of McGee. McGee is not a force for good in this at all. He just goes along.
What is McGee going to do with a human dollar bill?
Yes. Mm. So Nick does say, I'll give you a dollar if you sink into this movie with me. Yeah. I mean, maybe he's buying little pint-sized alcohol for himself, like a little bottle to get drunk on. But he's spineless. There's no moral compass in McGee. He's not like,
he's
I don't know, Nick. What's that?
Yeah, he's greedy. Yeah, he's definitely not a conscience.
No.
Like, he's
like
Jiminy
if,
Cricket.
If Geppetto, no, if, what is the?
Jiminy Cricket.
If Jiminy Cricket had head trauma. Like, because it's sure. Like he loses what he's trying to do. He like always lectures him after he fails, but then sets him up to fail.
Yeah.
He's a very contradictory character. And I'm not entirely sure what the methodology is behind him. I just think he's supposed to be comic relief. But as an adult, when none of it feels comic, it's hard to sort of, you know, figure that out.
Yeah.
McGee is the only one that does what he wants to do.
McGee is pure id.
I like that.
Yeah, actually, Caroline, you connect with that part of the character.
I do. McGee, Rizzo, you know, all of those sort of...
He's clipping his freaking toenails at one point. He does Roger Ebert cosplay because Christian children love Siskel and
Ebert
parodies.
He has like a little
pot
belly on it.
Yes.
Yeah. That's so funny.
And they full on like draw him shooting people with a gun and the new like... You know, dirty, whatever the Sam Spade.
Because it's Sam Spade, and then I don't remember what the name of the new one is, but it's funny. I think, so I made this short in 2010 called Casa Living, and in it, Brandon Routh and Brett Harrison are like fighting monsters, but you don't see the monsters. Mm-hmm. And I swear to God, when I was watching this last night, I think I internalized the idea from that second animated thing where you never see who or what he's shooting at. And it's always just seeing him reacting and fighting
just
the
a
things.
Bunch of noises.
And I remember just as a kid being kind of enamored with the idea of like, I don't even know who he's fighting. Like he's just sitting here getting like a bigger gun and a bigger gun. And it's, and it still somehow works.
Well, this
it's one of the only things that I find genuinely interesting in this episode.
Well, this is going to be a fun game for listeners. You can rent Happily and then kind of Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, Wizard of Oz style, figure out how each scene in Happily is connected to another episode of McGee and Me that already exists and where the kind of influence might have been. Like,
consider the source.
Yeah. Again, like Mr. Baldwin warned us, you got to consider the source with that
and
stuff.
The source is a little blonde freak.
A little blonde freak who threatens to murder a dog by bombing him at one point.
Kevin, as a father of doggers, that, you now find that offensive.
As a father of doggers, that truly, it hit me different than if I hadn't owned a little furry friend.
You know it's wrong now.
Yeah, now I understand.
Okay, another thing I was thinking about with, you know, the content warning that people were sending about Night of the Blood Freaks was I'm not really a horror person. I'm trying now, but I, you know, for a long time very much agreed with the kind of person who would write this episode, mm-hmm. which is that like horror is so obviously nonsense. There is nothing good. There's nothing you will learn from it. And it will also fuck up your entire moral compass and you'll think it's okay to saw people. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. But then later on, you just learn that there are plenty of people for whom horror just like scratches an itch and is a great thing and is like delightful. And I point to Ariana Grande, famous horror fan, who
What's
is successful, well-adjusted, and rich, you know? So like, it can all work out. I guess I'm just saying, like, horror movies can be this boogeyman, you know, wink, thing for people when they don't love it, you know, and don't, like, get the same kind of joy out of it that a lot of people do.
Yeah,
people
and it's
like Ben David.
Totally, and it's like a roller coaster where it's like, you think, like, you would never shame someone for not wanting to get on a roller coaster, but for some people, a roller coaster is just a fun little thrill.
Yeah.
And the way that horror movies probably do not affect people in certain ways that people might assume.
Yes.
I've known some people as an adult who were not horror fans and grew to become one because they realized there's a misunderstanding about it, is that, because like, to me, most of my favorite horror movies are just fun. Like, I don't, not much scares me as an adult. And there's just, you know, it is the most fun genre because there's less rules to it. It's less narrative based. It's less logic based. It can be dreamlike. There's mm-hmm. just so much you can do with it. It's not going to be for everybody, but in my experience, there's a lot of people who like have kind of inflated the weight of it in their mind. And they think, oh no, like this movie is going to be so scary or whatever. And then you watch a couple and you're like, oh, these are just fun, you know?
Yeah.
But then there's also people who get scared of everything and probably should not watch any.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And like a lot of little kids obviously shouldn't see stuff before they're ready, you know, and can give them nightmares or whatever.
Do you have any of those images yourself, Caroline, where it's like, oh, I saw that. Maybe I shouldn't.
Oh,
it's still in my head.
Yes.
Really?
Oh my God. I saw some weird like Tooth Fairy horror movie when I was
with The Rock.
Probably a little older than you think. No. Oh God. I don't even remember. I feel like it had Waterfall in the title.
Okay, anyway. Tooth Fairy Waterfall. Everyone Google
it. So horrifying. And it's just some story of like, oh, the Tooth Fairy was this lady in our town who was burned to death for being a witch. And now she hovers over your bed every time you put a tooth under it or something.
Mm.
And she looks so scary. And that really fucked me up for like a while.
That sounds scary.
I was probably like 13 when I saw it too, which is, you know, older than most kids.
No, but that makes sense.
But it,
to me,
it affirmed like, oh, this is why I don't see these movies. You know, it's like, this is bad for my brain.
Well, I don't gravitate towards the horror genre either, like natively. I'll see the A24 stuff and like some of the more classic stuff. But the thing that I remember burnt into my brain from when I was a kid, I think I was 11 years old. It was not from a horror movie. It was from this movie called The Messenger. It's a Luc Besson movie starring Mila Jovovich as Joan of Arc. And this was like a weird Apocalypse Now, Deep Impact thing Armageddon, Deep Impact thing, where it was like there was The Messenger, then there was a Lili Sobieski Joan of Arc movie at the same time. But there's a scene in The Messenger where she's having these like nightmarish dreams about Jesus. And there's one point where Jesus like grasps her face and like starts pleading with her, and then blood starts running down his face while he's crying.
Oh my god.
And that one's burned into my brain. I will say, ironically, the monster that's haunting me is Luc Besson's Jesus Christ.
Your savior.
From The Messenger. So
your savior is your monster.
That one got in there. I don't know if you have anything like that yourself, Ben David, where it's like, oh, that stayed with me, or I saw that when I was a kid.
Well,
that made
it's
an impression.
Funny because the stuff, because I wasn't allowed to watch horror as a kid, but I would see like horror that was designed for kids.
Mm-hmm.
But it's weird. Some of the stuff that traumatized me was not scenes in horror movies. Like the thing, like I saw this movie called Fresh, and it's like Sam Jackson. It's about these kids who are like gang adjacent. And there's a scene in it where like this maybe 12-year-old kid gets shot and killed, and I watched it late at night at my grandparents' house on cable, and I could not sleep. Ooh. It was just so, the things that scared me as a kid were things that were nihilistic, kind of like watching
tragedy.
Something
like
a movie that could be like flippant with death, you know.
Oh,
or like something that could be like so shocking. But the things though that really scared me, I saw when I was like really young, as I'd walk downstairs because I couldn't sleep and my parents were watching Gremlins or Ghostbusters and like movies that are not even designed to be that scary, but the statue dog thing in Ghostbusters I was scared of for years.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I'm very sensitive to like how young kids should be when they watch scary stuff. It was like, that was like a big trick with Are You Afraid of the Dark, is just like you want to make something that a 10-year-old could watch, but also scary enough that like a 14-year-old wouldn't think it was
lame,
you know,
or
chicken shit or whatever 14-year-olds say. I'm sure they all say chicken shit.
Both a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old,
well, and also trying to make their parents happy too, like that's sort of the inner, that was like the arithmetic in my brain, and that's how little I know about math, because that's probably wrong. But for me it was just like, you want to make something for people who grew up with the show and their 10-year-old kid and like their 14-year-old kid, because the 16-year-old kid is just going to be like, this is stupid. Like we did a market research screening with these kids, and like a 12-year-old kid, they're like, do you like horror? And he goes, yeah. They're like, what's your favorite? And he's like, Get Out. And I'm like, oh, well, you're,
oh geez,
watch Get Out at 12.
You'll be fine.
Not,
I'm like, who let, oh man.
Oh my gosh. I know. I saw a scary movie at a theater one time, and someone had like their 5-year-old with them. And I was like, well, I'm watching something happen in two ways right now.
Like, you know, I saw a horror movie in the theater too. It was called Fahrenheit 9/11.
I saw a horror movie that was so deceitful, and it was called An Inconvenient Truth.
I saw a horror movie that's actually 24 hours a day, and it's actually everything that happens on CNN. It's a little horror movie called that.
Wait, speaking of kids' reactions, I was dying at how the kids react to actually watching Night of the Blood Freaks, because mm-hmm. I thought they were going to be like really scared, you know, and like
they're just like
horrified. And instead, they just look like grossed out and disappointed in themselves, which I found so much funnier. They were just like, oh, and he like eventually rips Damn. Off his 3D glasses too and is like, who am I? And then he has that long walk like by himself. Down the street.
Yeah, okay.
That's the manipulation tactic, is they're telling you that if you watch these movies at your friend's house, you're going to regret it.
You'll self-censor so well, yeah, that you will feel the shame.
And that's when this song plays.
Yes.
Right here. And sort of structural thing they would do on McGee and Me, is the composer James Koval would write a song based on the themes of the episode. This one seems to have a 50-second long synth intro. Let me get to the words. Okay, here we go.
They all said you'd be cool. Is this all that you thought it would be? 'Cause now you see who's a fool.
Okay, so that's James Koval being like, you're a fool for seeing this movie. I looked up James Koval's other credits. He's a composer of a certain note. He works. His other credits include Dancing Ninja, Santa with Muscles, and a movie called Southern Fried Zombies. So
wow.
He's no stranger to the genre.
He's not consistent.
He did Santa with Muscles?
He did, evidently. Yes.
Look, what you FWM? See is what you get, so you better make sure it's heaven sent. Anything you do will come back to you. It's a very threatening song.
Yeah.
It's deceptive into sounding like a pop thing, but it's a threatening song.
Yeah. No, I felt threatened while listening to it.
Yeah. And frustrating, you know. And then some ways it is true, which makes it effective, you know, because we've just explained the song's purpose, which is that we do have things traumatically burned into our brains
Jesus
for like years.
Me. Yes.
Yes.
But
it's untrue in that there's a lot that doesn't stick around.
It'd be
like,
hard to write something
fine.
Where it's like, use your discernment in every situation.
Yeah.
Best judgment.
It's right for you.
And just to wrap it up, I will say the phrase that they use, that I'm sure all of us heard in some measure or another growing up, garbage in, garbage out. There is no, like the Lord says, it's really important, garbage in, garbage out. There's no garbage in, garbage out verse in the Bible. It does talk about the renewal of your mind and like thinking on good things and whatnot, but there's nothing in the Bible implying if you put garbage into your system, you will output garbage also. So mm-hmm. that is a Focus on the Family era sort of invention.
It's sort of a twist of like, you know, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, think on these things, that kind of thing.
So let's rate this puppy, guys. This puppy, as a father of doggers, the way this works, Ben David, we're going to give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Thumbs up is a holy roast. That's when we send it to heaven and we say...
A holy toast.
Yeah. Oh, did I say roast?
You said, yeah.
Oh, this is like Kirk Franklin,
Kirk Cameron.
Toast
is to heaven, roast is to...
Toast is heaven, roast is hell. Roast, that's when we send it to hell and we say...
No.
Or if we don't want to send it to either, we can send it to purgatory, which we call...
The space between.
Caroline, we'll start with you.
I'm going to give it a toast. I enjoyed myself.
Toast
I think Night
McGee.
Of the Blood Franks is wrong, and I hope none of you saw it.
All right, Ben David, what say you?
Huge thumbs up.
Huge thumbs up. Ben David gives it a toast. I'm giving it a toast too. Guess what, McGee?
Yeah.
Somehow, against all odds, you're going to heaven.
It's only 3 out of 3 for McGee. I can't help it. I love him.
Yeah, we need to interrogate that sometime, like on a second service or something. But you can give it a roast or toast yourself. Go to @ChristianFunPod. Get out there and...
Pokemon, go to the polls.
There we go.
We did it, Joe.
Thank you, Kamala. Remember we used to call her Kamala? Man, we were so ignorant. Now we're You're so smart. All right. Listen, Ben David, you know how this works. You've been in a church before, in a youth group. We're dimming the lights and we're lighting the candles in here. We're taking it to a more worshipful space. We're not here to promote ourselves or to plug our projects, like, say, a movie we directed starring Joel McHale and Carrie B. Shea. We're here to lift them up to the Lord, and we'll start, as per usual, with Caroline.
You can kneel at the altar and lift me up at Caroline's Farts if you feel like you need to rededicate yourself to my Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok. And I'm going to lift up something that's also very God-honoring, and that is a show called Letterkenny on Hulu, which is about Canadian cliques that war with each other, and it's a lot of wordplay. It's very pleasant. I've just been plowing through it. It's great.
Plowing through Letterkenny, baby.
Plowing through Letterkenny.
All right. Nice rec. All right. Thank you, Caroline. We turn it to Ben David.
I don't know how to really do this joke well, so I'm just going to say you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram.
I'll translate. You can lift him up on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, you can lift me up on social media, on all the Twitters. And you can also lift up the very R-rated motion picture event of 2021 happily.
Terrific movie.
To rent,
watched it,
or purchase
this afternoon
on any sort of digital thing.
It's a Christian movie too, as we've explained. It stars a famous Christian, Joel McHale.
You can
yeah, it's
watching.
All about the New Testament.
That's right. So
and see, there's a lot of ambiguity in the movie because people just didn't read the Bible. Like, so if you don't understand the ending, it's because you just didn't read the Bible enough.
Exactly. Yeah, no, and you. I love that's the message of the movie, too. What's the last great thing you watched or that you saw yourself that wasn't your own movie?
I watched Cradle to the Grave last night, the DMX Jet Li movie. Uh-huh. And I got to tell you, when it came out, didn't really think that much of it. Right now, it absolutely rules.
Wow. Hey, how about that? I know. It's not, you know, I've gone into a rhythm of watching like movies or TV shows of people who just recently passed. It's a nice way to honor that. I've been meaning to watch Play Misty for Me.
Oh, yeah, me too. But DMX is great in Cradle to Grave, and it's got everything you could want from plutonium diamonds to ATV chases across rooftops of downtown LA or Jet Li fighting 40 MMA fighters. It's high-quality Christian entertainment.
High-quality Christian fun. Cradle to the Grave.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ben
Thank
David.
Thank you for finally making Christian entertainment that I can feel good just watching.
Yeah. Well, Ben David's whole thing, I think his Twitter bio is make Christian entertainment great again. So it's kind of his stated mission and purpose.
Yeah, but how do you pronounce that? It's M making Christian entertainment. So it's M-C-E-G. A like McKega?
McKega.
McGee. McGee. We have to figure out a way to make it McGee.
Guys, everybody, so like, McGee.
Make Christians gracious. Make Christian great entertainment.
Entertainment.
For in parentheses.
Eternally.
Everyone or eternally. Make great.
Eternal entertainment.
Make Christian great entertainment eternally. Woo. Thank you, Ben David.
No, make Christians gorge entertainment earnestly.
Ethically?
Ooh,
ethically.
Make Christians gorge entertainment earnestly. I love that. Thank you. You can lift me up everywhere. Kevin T. Porter. I will lift up a movie called Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always. What a harrowing watch. You got to be in the right kind of headspace for it. I personally was in the throes of my second dose of vaccine side effects while watching it.
Oh, jeez.
Made it a sort of trippy experience, but very good, very important watch. You can lift us up at Christian Fun Pod everywhere. You can go to patreon.com/goodchristianfun for more good Christian fun. You can leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. Every review you leave, we donate $1 to charity. This month's charity is the Red Canary Song, a grassroots collective of Asian and migrant sex workers organizing transnationally. Ben David, thank you so much for joining us on
hey.
The show. Friend, what a blast. What a nice time. And you know what? This is a youth group in which you're welcome anytime, and you are very cool here.
Whoa.
Yeah. You actually run it.
Yeah,
we
you're actually
from you.
You're the leader.
I'm growing a beard.
Yeah, we're both growing beards. And there's nothing left to say except for, in all of Pod's people said, amen.
Amen.
And let's get back to that kick-ass McGee and Me song. It's going to stay right there in your heart, which is a song about horror movies and cholesterol.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.